Redemption, the podcast designed to save the planet. In today's episode, we delve into Europe's ambitious move to reduce packaging waste, promote the circular economy, and harmonize internal market rules through its groundbreaking Packaging and Packaging Waste Regulations, or PPWR. The European Parliament adopted this landmark legislation in April of this year with broad consensus. The regulations are currently being finalized and translated from the provisional agreement to the final version, which is expected to be signed later this year. In this episode, we talk to experts whose work has been instrumental in shaping the PPWR. Together, we explore some practical aspects of the new regulation, including its ambitious targets for recycling and its significant impact on reducing single-use plastics and promoting reuse. But first, let's pull back and learn why the introduction of this regulation is such a big deal. And who better to take us through this than ReLoop's very own Clarissa Murawski. Clarissa, take it away.
Countries in Europe joined the European Union to gain numerous benefits, including economic growth, political stability, and enhanced global influence. And membership in the EU allows countries to participate in a large single market, promoting trade and investment, while also benefiting from economic stability through shared policies. So by working together, EU countries, many of which are quite small, have a stronger collective voice in international matters and can implement high standards in areas like consumer protection and environmental regulation. We're looking at about 500 million people represented by 27 countries. So imagine the European Union is like a big club and all the countries are members in that club. And the EU sets rules that everyone in the club must follow to keep things running smoothly. And these rules come in two forms, directives and regulations. As it relates to the packaging regulation, it's important to know that it was a directive since 1994, and only now has it become a regulation. So what's the difference? When the EU issues a directive, it's more like a general guidance or framework. The directive sets the goals that all member countries need to achieve, but it allows the country to decide how to reach those goals. Member states have to create their own national laws to meet the directive's objectives, and they have flexibility around how to do it. Regulations are very different. Think of regulations as a one-size-fits-all rules. When the EU passes a regulation, it's like saying, this is the rule, it applies exactly the same in every single member state, period. No changes, no adjustments. Every member state must follow the rule to the letter. So why would the EU switch from what was a packaging directive to a packaging regulation? Well, there's a couple of key pieces. Uniformity. So regulations ensure the same rules. And then clarity. They reduce confusion by providing single, clear sets of rules. And it helps businesses and citizens understand their obligations without having to navigate different laws. Understand that the internal market is made up of 27 countries, many different languages. So the directives, they give countries some flexibility, but the regulations provide that uniform, clear, immediate rules to help for a cohesive internal market. Now, when it comes to businesses, remember, you're a business that's selling into 27 countries. So having that cohesiveness is incredibly important. And if I'm speaking to an American audience right now, I'm sure you can relate because you have 50 different markets yourself. You know, I've been in this game for a long time. I've seen businesses fight regulation in all markets where I've been involved. But when this came about and there was public consultation on it, every single business and association of businesses was supportive of this regulation because it gave them that clarity in the rules. So indeed, the packaging regulation introduces a set of new ambitious targets compared to the old directive. One of the significant new targets is the separate collection for recycling target. Now, it was initially proposed in the single-use plastics directive passed in 2019, but it's now been extended to include beverage cans. And it specifically says that 90% of all plastic beverage bottles and metal cans must be separately collected by 2029. And unlike traditional recycling target, which focuses more on sorted materials, which includes from incineration, this new target emphasizes collection and the effectiveness of collection, because the goal for this target was really to combat litter and ensure that high quality material was collected for recycling. And I can tell you the impacts of the target have been already evident. So high collection requirements that came from PET in the single-use directive that we saw a few years ago have already led to new deposit return systems in many countries. In the last 18 months alone, we've seen new deposit systems in countries like Romania, Hungary, Latvia, Ireland, Slovakia. And we know that in the next 3 years, we're going to see new programs in Portugal, Greece, Cyprus, Austria, and Poland. So it leaves only 7 EU countries without a deposit return program, but they'll likely need to introduce a deposit return program to meet these high targets as well. And we know that with some of the countries that have results already, like Malta or Lithuania, that they got to 90% in 2 years. So that is going to have a major impact on a number of things. And at ReLoop, we looked at the impact of getting to 90 from this one target alone and what it would mean. And you can look at our Target 90 report and you can get all the information, but it showed that there would be a lot less waste, like 500,000 tons less PET bottles wasted. It goes on to include cans and glass. It talks about the amount of extraction of virgin materials that would be reduced as a result of constantly recirculating materials and what it means in terms of lower emissions. The number that we came up with for Europe getting to 90, that by 2040, it would be equivalent to about 4.3 cumulatively reduced greenhouse gas emissions, which is equivalent to about 4% of the annual Paris Agreement reduction goal. So that's a lot. This could have a major impact. And that's just one target that I'm talking about.
And that report, by the way, you can get to it by going to target90.org.
It's safe to say that when the packaging regulation was released by the European Commission back in November 2022, it was a real shock in its level of ambition. It was so popular and went from being a commission document in November 2022 to the provisional agreement being approved a mere 18 months later. It's a massive regulatory package. It's over like 150 pages. It's unprecedented that something would go so fast. But one of the things that was so interesting was that normally when you have a regulation, member states tend to push back against it because they're like, hey, wait a second, we want our autonomy. We want to do things our way. In one of the final votes on it, it was a unanimous vote from the member states. There was 2 abstentions, but 25 member states voted in favor of it. And that's because they need it. They need the problem solved. Usually the parliament is more ambitious than the member states themselves because they're always the ones that have to comply with the laws. In this particular case, it was the member states that were more ambitious. And they were the ones that made sure that the reuse targets were still there. And they were the ones that made sure that things like deposit return would still be there. But the vast majority of the industries did support it. And they even joined us. There were amazing coalitions that formed where you had kind of lefty environmentalists working with big bad industry to support provisions within the PPWR. And that's, again, unprecedented. We saw an incredible amount of coalitions popping up because there's nothing more powerful than a coalition to say, hey, government, we really like this provision. You got the left and the right that are all supporting it, so go forward. I think the media is going to really pick up on it after that formal adoption in October. And then it's going to be all enacted and it's going to be in place by early 2026.
Next, let's hear from Fernando Rodriguez Mata, Director General at the New European Reuse Alliance, or New ERA, who discusses how the regulation impacts member states and the role of associations like New ERA in shaping future legislation.
How do you see the new PPWR aligning with your organization's vision for reusable packaging across Europe? And where is there good alignment? Where does it fall short?
The text contains some of the recommendations we provided to the different policymakers. So that's a good positive symbol that they heard us and they took into account some of our policy recommendations. For example, the take back obligation across the entire supply chain that's been there, the labeling requirements to ensure that differentiate between reuse and single use, but also the fact that reusable packaging, some of the products are already been placed in the market for many years and that they should not have the same requirements as single-use packaging. Also, when it comes to recycled content of plastic packaging, there are good things there, yet there are things that fell short of ambition, purely because of political reasons, there were unprecedented levels of lobbying from different sectors. In particular, takeaway, we saw literally people almost living in the parliament trying to convince specific political groups in the parliament. And that eventually paid off with regression in the text. Yet, we believe that we will keep building on that, that over the next years, we will advance in seeing more targets for different market segments than the ones we have today in the current text.
Given that you have some member states in the EU with well-established, highly functioning reuse systems, particularly in beverage, and then many other member states are in the earliest stages of development. So talk about how the PPWR packaging reuse targets, what do you think the impact will be given this very inconsistent implementation status across the landscape?
Yeah, well, that's a classic in a lot of EU legislation. We have Europe at very different speeds. Usually Germany, France have their own rhythm. Then we have the Eastern European countries and Mediterranean countries. So that's something common in the EU. The PPWR, what it's a minimum common denominator that all member states should comply with in the next years. That's also a very positive news, the possibility to member states to go beyond this minimum threshold. So what we envisage in the future is indeed the countries that are already championing reuse today, going beyond that, going beyond the PPWR and really setting the conditions to make reuse at scale. Today,
right.
Because some of the targets for beverage is still 10% by 2030, which is maybe not enough. But in these cases, countries like Germany, Denmark, the Nordics, or France could go beyond and will hopefully set national legislation.
That flexibility is really important.
Exactly. That flexibility aspect will hopefully help to advance more reuse in those regions where it is possible. And then also give also the possibility to member states that maybe are not advanced and are really in starting reuse systems to have a legal framework that gives them the possibility to start working and understanding reuse systems and learning from other member states. And there in ERA, we are also looking into this implementation phase, in building bridges between the different authorities at local, regional, national level to learn from the reuse systems that are already existing and been running for decades.
So New Era obviously had a massive impact on the PPWR, as you just talked about, the specific provisions that are there because of your involvement. And now New Era will be supporting members in this transition to meet these new standards. So talk a little bit about how you plan to engage and support with implementation.
There are two elements. One is at the European level, ensure that the right secondary legislation will be in place and will be adopted. And that's alongside with member states that are going to be part of these secondary legislation discussions. And then at the national level, and that's what New Era wants to develop in the next years, we want to support the development of national or regional reuse hubs that will be able to connect with the key stakeholders at this level. Because at the end, reuse is a local solution and it's the local supply chains. It needs people there on the ground to ensure that what the legislation says today at the European level can be, let's say, tailor-made to meet the conditions and the features that one country or one region can have. And to understand as well the implications that maybe establishing this system may have in the current cultural background and basically how the system works, because it's not the same in Germany, where, for example, DRS systems have been running now for decades and consumers are very well educated, than in Greece or maybe in Spain, where people are completely not used to do that. So we need to take these cultural aspects in mind to help implementing these reuse systems at different speed, but understanding what are the conditions in these countries. And for that, we need local people to help us. And that's what we will definitely strive for in the next months.
And do you think you'll arrive at sort of a standard template?
Absolutely. So we have the PPWR, which sets really the basics. I would say first, in terms of terminology, semantics is necessary that everyone understands the same thing. So what reuse means, what refill means, what recycling means, because still today, a lot of people confuse it. So that, in terms of terminology, needs to be understood by everyone when trying to implement the regulation. So I would think that's the first step. And then when it comes to compliance of other things, for example, minimum number of rotations, how we're going to monitor all these things, there will have to
enforcement,
all the same level playing field, because otherwise what's going to happen is we'll have the free rider countries trying to say, I'm doing reusable packaging, but actually it's not reusable because there's not a system behind it. So it's ending up actually backfiring us. So that would be really negative for us, that we have a bad story that could be very easy picked by other industry players saying, we already told you reuse was not going to work.
Right.
And that's why we need to be taking specific care of these countries where this could be problematic.
Yep. So how then do you envision the role of trade associations like New Era in shaping further legislative development?
I think that the New Era emerged because there was the need from the industry players that gathered in 2022 to found a body that could be their voice. And we are in the quest of doing so. We are working towards that objective to defend and represent the industry interests at European level. Let's face it, without legislation, the change will not happen. I mean, there may be some incentives trying to change things, some trials, some pilot projects, but if we want to really take off and have reuse at scale, we need the legal incentives to make this happen.
Yeah.
That's what we have been doing since day one, advocating for reuse at the BPWR. We also need that now at national level for the implementation. In France, we have legislation, the anti-waste and circular economy law, that sets even higher targets for reuse. The BPWR is the first step, and now we're going to move along and try to make it more ambitious. And for that, we need actors also in Africa, in Asia, to make these changes happen at the legislative side. That's why I love the name of New Era. It represents a new way of doing things in the public affairs sphere. I think that in terms of legislation for environment, the EU has been a bit the laboratory for the world over the last 2 decades at least. We've been pushing for a lot of ambitious legislation, and I think countries are looking into the EU and seeing how this is working. I must say that it's not always working, because obviously as a laboratory in practice in kind of legal frameworks, not all the legislation works, and obviously we need to tweak that and learn on the go. But I think definitely it sets the tone for other countries to adapt the legislation. The EU is really a front runner in setting the trends and the right legislation. And I think in the case of the PPWR, we'll see these sorts of laws being passed all over the world, and hopefully as well at the international level later this year with the Global Plastic Treaty.
Next, I spoke with Natan Dufour, Reuse Systems Manager and the leader of the Reuse Vanguard Project, or RSVP, at Zero Waste Europe. Natan is going to explore with us the successes of the RSVP and how it aligns with the new regulation.
The Reuse Vanguard Project, we started it at the end of 2020, early 2021, which was a bit of a different context. The main difference is that now we have a negotiated text that is now about to become a reality for a continent of 500 million inhabitants. It's quite a major achievement, but there are many loopholes as well and things that we have to overcome moving forward, especially when we speak about reuse and reuse systems. But I do believe that the Reuse Vanguard Project has been quite instrumental, because through that joint effort with all our partners that are involved, we've been able to move forward in terms of really putting reuse systems at the core of the solutions agenda. So prevention and reuse are on the top or close to the top of the waste hierarchy, and it has to come before recycling. And that's what we have been hammering out in the last years. And I think to a big extent, we have managed to push it through. Now, the second achievement with this project is the need to co-design the conditions for a larger uptake of reusables. And through RSVP, we're focusing mostly for the implementation work on takeaway cups and food containers. Why on that? Because this is where we have a clear level of action at the local level. While for beverages, for instance, is something that you would negotiate more with national authorities and have a different type of discussion, right? With takeaway, you can bring the local stakeholders around the table, can identify it quite clearly as well, and you can try to get them going, whether it is in terms of funding the initiative, in terms of helping them to understand how it works and the defining the parameters of the local experimentation to start with, and then what would be the pathway to move citywide. And so for the time being, we've run all the designing phases in 6 different cities in Europe. So to name them, you have Barcelona, Paris, Berlin, and then you have Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and then Leuven and Ghent, 2 smaller cities in Belgium. So we're moving forward and started the implementation work, the proper testing phases in Rotterdam. We launched the pilot a couple of months ago, and now in Leuven and Ghent. So yeah, that's very exciting. And then on top of that, there are other cities that we align with, like the city of Aarhus in Denmark, where you have a very interesting experimentation going on there, reverse vending machines in the public spaces, where people can very conveniently bring back their containers, starting with cups and then moving on with food containers very soon.
That's excellent. I mean, RSVP is kind of a roadmap for policymakers, right? There's a policy document that very clearly lays out where Europe needs to go for reuse and how to get there. And then paired with it is this just unrivaled technical analysis that really lays out the justification for prioritizing, as you said, specific areas, foodware, e-commerce, beverage, some of the sectors which are the highest priority areas. And that really is so unique, especially for US audience where the policy processes often don't unfold that way. And even when there's an effort to do that, they can easily be rerouted or disrupted. These outputs were the culmination of so many organizations and stakeholders working together. And there's nothing like that here. And so I think, as you said, like it formed the agenda, but also it wasn't just about the outputs. It was all the ingredients that went into that, to me, that made it so special. So curious to hear how that process went, how people came together and pulling together the right analysis.
On top of running an analysis, a research in terms of helping us to define what are the priority sectors and then push that to the legislator here in Europe, I believe we managed to secure a certain level of ambition on those priority sectors, especially. That's quite a success, generally speaking, but it's not enough. And through the RSVP work, we hope to bridge the remaining gap because there is a gap. If you take specifically the sector of takeaway, you realize that actually the reuse target that is in the packaging and packaging waste regulation is actually non-binding. It says endeavor to achieve 10%. Which means it's basically a posh way to say, well, you try, but I mean, let's see how it goes, right? So we can't satisfy ourselves with that, and we need to really bridge that gap. So how we plan to do that, I think we've done a good job in terms of bringing together quite a large, through the different cities. It represents altogether a very large ecosystem of players that are very much looking forward to get that transition started. And that's a mixture of private and public players. The European Parliament voted on that text with a loud majority that actually signified that the initial proposition was watered down big time. And some of the key reuse targets that were in the proposal from the initiators, in this case, it's the European Commission, and we were so disappointed, to be honest. And then a couple of days later, there was an event in the Netherlands called the Reusable Packaging Fair. It was the first of its kind, and you had the whole local Dutch ecosystem gathering around how to make reuse happen. I was like, what is happening? What sort of strange world we live in? On one hand, you have the legislator at the European level voting down something that is actually putting recycling again on top of reuse. But then if you look at the local level, people are much more pragmatic and they want to move forward. And now we need to go the extra mile to make sure that you consider stronger measures as well. So, for instance, you need to make sure that the customers actually get the reusables in their hands. You need to offer a reuse option as a HoReCa actor. You need to make sure that it gets in the hand of the customers and that afterwards you fine-tune, operationally speaking, how the reverse logistics works, how the interface with the consumer can be improved and stuff like that. But that comes as the next phase. The first phase is how you get to volumes that are telling you how your system is performing. How do you need to set and fine-tune the governance behind the system as well, and things like that, which are of utmost importance.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about the cognitive dissonance between pushback at the EU level on the PPWR, while at the same time, there's all these local initiatives and really a strong sense that this is the way forward. You spoke of the disappointing dilution of the targets, which again, doesn't reflect feasibility of implementation, right? And that's what the RSVP does, is it really clearly demonstrates suitability of reusable alternatives. So the evidence was all there. The pushback is really just purely political and on the part of economic actors that are not willing to make the switch and certainly don't want to be subject to the regulations.
To learn about the cultural and behavioral shifts necessary to adopt reusable packaging at scale, I spoke with Dr. Dagny Tucker, co-founder of Perpetual, an organization that brings together communities, businesses, governments, experts, and citizens to implement reuse solutions.
Dagny, given your background in systems thinking and design, what are some of the key strategies you believe are necessary to encourage cultural and behavioral shifts towards reusable packaging?
I think while there are enormous cultural gaps, you will see different systems will need to be contextually appropriate. I think there's a lot of similarities and a lot we've learned over the last decade of open network reusable foodware, as well as closed networks like corporate campuses or events, etc. In order to get that large scale adoption, I think what we've seen with PPWR, it isn't a zero. There's something there. I think it isn't quite the targets that a lot of people had hoped would really drive this. But there's enough momentum out there, and we're starting to see the overall landscape of legislation, whether that is PPWR, which fell maybe short, or EPR in California, or the INC, where you're actually starting to get the momentum necessary to have some real initiative. You're starting to see real dollars come into this space. And I think scale is really what's going to turn the corner for reuse as an industry. I believe deeply that the consumer change piece of it will fall away if we have the infrastructure in place that exists to currently support single-use norms. And so in the absence of that, it's very difficult, of course, to get somebody to make an entirely different behavior a norm if I have to go out of my way 20 minutes, if I have to really change multiple parts of my life, it's going to be difficult for me to adopt something. If, on the other hand, you have initiatives that are in place where you really have an immersive experience, where reuse is an option everywhere, and you can drop it off as conveniently as you might single use, we're seeing some models that are starting to emerge potentially where waste management is playing a role in the reuse system, either in reverse hauling or logistics or even potentially curbside collection. And I think that these are the places where you're going to see it become a no-brainer for all of the co-benefits that reuse offers beyond just displacing the single-use item.
As an American, you understand some of the specific American hesitations around reuse. And because of being based in Europe, you can see how the cultural norms are similar or different here. So I'm interested to hear you speak to or potentially challenge this idea that reuse is appropriate in Europe because the consumers are willing to do more and that Americans are not. And I would challenge that, and I'm curious to hear how you would sort of challenge that misperception.
Absolutely. I mean, there are some specific examples by which you can easily lean into, and they've been quoted by a million people 100 different times. And one includes like the German beverage bottling model. And obviously they've done an exceptional job, but it's an ingrained culture. So I do think you have places where cultural norms around return are deeply embedded. And they already exist. And I think Germany would be one of those places. That said, it has yet to be a cultural norm there for foodware to be a reusable item.
Right.
And despite legislation there that requires foodware to be offered by every business for to-go, you'll see that the adoption just isn't there. I believe that this ties into the same reason it ties into reuse adoption anywhere, that you are going to have very small sliver of the population that has the time in their everyday life to go out of their way
right.
to do the right thing. And if that is what continually examined or reuse's success is compared against a single use system that has extensive infrastructure that's been supported by government and
right.
subsidized by everyone, you're making an apples to oranges comparison here. I think that innately, if you put reuse in all of the businesses and you
right.
had the same infrastructure that you had for single use, it wouldn't matter if you're
right.
in Europe or in the US. You're going to
yeah.
have adoption. There's a lot of time that needs to be spent in an organized way, socializing reuse, demonstrating what it is. Aarhus has really created something that I think has some interesting data points there. There's a city pilot. They committed to doing public street infrastructure. And we did a little bit of a secret shopper sort of tour up there to get an experience of whether it was working or not. With our theory having been for some time that you needed to have street return receptacles, it needed to be easy. According to interviews with baristas there who had offered reusables before, but without return infrastructure, they said on their best day they're having about 10% adoption. Now, since the streets infrastructure was put into place, they have minimum 40 to 60% adoption. It's not universally available, but it's pretty visible, and the city did a pretty good job of getting the word out, and it's easy. This is not a difficult formula. Reuse is complicated, but it's not rocket science.
Right. Yeah, you just need to make the default option the better option.
Thank you for tuning in to this insightful episode of Redemption. We hope you gained a deeper understanding of the PPWR and its significant impact on sustainability efforts and what it could mean for the world at large. Special thanks to Clarissa, Fernando, Natan, and Dagny for sharing their expertise and perspectives on these pivotal pieces of legislation. As we've learned, the PPWR aims to standardize recycling practices across Europe, reduce single-use plastics, and enhance reuse systems. The collaborative efforts highlighted in this episode demonstrate the power of unified action in achieving environmental goals. Remember, the steps that Europe is taking today can inspire and inform initiatives the world over. Stay tuned for more deep dives into environmental developments as we continue to work towards a zero-waste future. In the meantime, don't forget to visit our website, bottlebillreimagined.org, for more resources and subscribe to our newsletter, Bottle Bill Common Ground, for the latest updates. You can also leave a review on Redemption wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, working together from a common ground of knowledge, we can move effective initiatives forward.